Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We want to thank our friends at Nationwide Pet Insurance for sponsoring this wonderful conversation as we're celebrating CSR, celebrating the client service representative and receptionist out there with our one and only wonderful friend and colleague, Chief Veterinary Officer, Dr. Emily Tincture in the house. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. It's so great to see you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being here. Always good to chat with you. And one of your many hats that you wear, but you chat a lot about Spectrum of Care, as we're going to chat with that. And in enveloping and getting the team approach involved on this, because it really is a team approach when we're chatting about
Absolutely.
Spectrum of Care overall, right?
Everything from the finances to care plans that we're offering to filling in around the gaps, as we veterinarians sometimes forget some of those yes. pieces or aren't as good as having those conversations. Our CSRs are such an important part.
Yes, thank
we
you
appreciate
for all you,
you
do. Yes, we appreciate you. And at the time of filming, by the way, we are here at Western Veterinary Conference in Las Vegas too. So we've had a whole boatload of wonderful sessions that you've been speaking to us and sharing your information and knowledge with us. So thank you for doing all that.
We had some CSRs today in the emergency lecture, which was fabulous.
Excellent, that's fantastic. It's good to know because we got to know how to triage those phone calls. Okay, so more pet families are feeling financial strain right when their pet needs help the most. Mm. What shifts are you seeing in how people make decisions about care today? And what do us veterinary teams, what do we need to understand about that emotion when it's sometimes emotions run high during those conversations?
Absolutely. I think financial conversations have always been difficult, and we know that pet families are having more difficulty than ever accessing the veterinary care that they're looking for. So a few data points that I think are really important are, we're on a 4-year trend right now of decreasing visits from pets. So more pets are not receiving care than ever before, as percentage wise. And we're seeing that when we ask pet families, what are some of the barriers to care that you want and we know that your pet needs? And they're telling us that when over 50% of them are delaying care or not accessing care right now when they know that they need it, so not an educational piece, and about 70% of the time, that is from financial reasons. Mm-hmm. And that's from some great data from the PetSmart Charities Gallup study that was released in April last year. And I think really crucially, as we go back to that team-based care, we know that cost is a huge factor. And that they also ask them about value of care, that a lot of times when people are saying no to treatment plans, they're not fully grasping how the cost and the care that's being provided feels like it's bringing them and their pet the value that they're seeking, which I think tells us we have a lot of opportunities to lean into the communication side and make pet families feel like they're part of the treatment team with us.
Yeah, it's a little discouraging to hear that, you know, knowing like, my gosh, we really want them to get the care that they need, and no animal should be deprived of health care, of course, and we know finances can be such a barrier that we're trying to overcome. It's difficult out there. And I wonder, you know, and we don't want them to feel guilty. That's a big thing that we talk about when we talk about Spectrum Care in general. And there's a lot of different areas that we're going to chat about with this. But when you're offering a range of care options from basic to advanced, how do you explain those trade-offs such as outcomes, risk, costs that we just talked about, and next steps in a way that doesn't make them feel so pressured or feeling that guilt?
I love that question. There's so many pieces to that. What we do in the exam room is challenging, pulling together so many skills. And one of the most important things that we can do is make sure that the pet families we're serving, whether they would choose the level of care that we would, or whether they opt for a different plan and work on us with that, that they don't feel judged. We want them to come back and feel like they can tell us when they're uncomfortable, or they can tell us when they have financial constraints. And so I think about, what is the published definition of a spectrum of care? How do we meet pet families where they are and contextualize, you know, the pet in front of us and the person in front of us? There are three pieces to that. First is, we have to work at saying, how do we understand what pet family goals, values, and resources are? And we've done some research at Nationwide to help understand not everyone is looking for the same level of care. I think we experience that when we talk to pet families, but it's a good reminder for the entire team to say, okay, help me understand what some of your goals are, and very early on, help me understand what the finances are. Even in pre-triage, pre-appointment forms, when we know that pets are coming in, it's a little bit harder sometimes with emergency situations, but asking, does your pet have pet insurance? Do you potentially need financial assistance for anything that might come up in a particular appointment setting, especially when things get more expensive, when they start talking about surgery or chronic care or emergency care? And then how do we, you know, take those goals, those values that we've gained from our expanded medical and family history? How do we look at the evidence-based medicine in front of us and say, okay, I can come up with a couple of treatment plans depending on what's going on? We'll talk about that in an example in just a moment. And then how do I communicate, back to your question, non-judgmentally about what those options are while we make sure that we give informed consent? There are always trade-offs. Everything from, you know, advanced level care to basic level of care, the trade-offs in time, cost, and convenience will always be there. And the medical outcomes piece are so important. And so I know near and dear to your heart are our dachshunds. That I know you've had a few intervertebral disc problems recently.
I feel like one of them's back is made out of taffy. But, but yes, it's a very common thing that we see. And I was chatting with other pet owners, other dachshund owners in the waiting room about this issue. And you'll appreciate this. You don't know this, actually. I'm going to tell you right now that the four of us that were waiting, we all had pet insurance because we knew about intervertebral disc disease. And obviously, I'm a veterinarian, but the three weren't. And I asked them, how did you know about pet insurance? They said, well, we researched, and my veterinarian recommended it at the time of the puppy visit.
Oh, that's great.
So
that's what we like to hear.
We're getting there, right?
That's great news, yeah. Which hopefully helped, you know, not that anyone wants to wind up in the specialty practice talking about, you know, potential surgery for their beloved dachshund. But if you do get there, then the options can be sometimes quite costly to get to the outcome that we're looking for. And so, you know, intervertebral disc disease, you know, we have that range of everything from basic care, which is crate rest for 6 to 8 weeks. We know y'all aren't putting in your discharges 2 to 3 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks for the crate rest and pain medications and muscle relaxers and physical therapy, all the way to the other end of the spectrum. I know you have recent experience with surgery and a hemilaminectomy with an MRI and a specialist. And we know we can have, depending on their neurologic exam, really great outcomes with surgery up to, you know, depending on what their neurologic status is, 90 to 95% chance of going back to normal after surgery. We also can get pretty good outcomes with medical management as well, but we got to show some real tough love either with crate rest or in surgery and recovery. And it, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your experience navigating what does aftercare look like and how do we communicate well so that people understand what's coming after surgery? Yes. It's not surgery and then magic where you're recovered.
It really is a great point, because when we talk about spectrum of care, it's not even just the financial components, it's are you able to actually provide the care, and particularly this case for post-op, sometimes you have to do bladder expression, taking care of, as you know, like fecal incontinence, urinary incontinence that can happen. And of course it can get better, but sometimes it doesn't and they may be permanently, and then you have to have that discussion of, like, you know, carts and mobility and those things. But hopefully, for the most part, like, we were chatting in the waiting room about this too, there was one couple that were on their older side and they said, I just don't know if I can get in and out to do the hydrotherapy because of car purposes and driving. I was like, that's a great
transportation.
Transportation is like a huge thing that you don't think of spectrum of care. You know, and her dog was getting the surgery done, and so she was, they were talking to her about doing hydrotherapy, and she's, I don't think I'll be able, and they said, that's okay, you know,
we've got other options for
so
you,
so many options that are out there. And
absolutely.
So she says, I didn't feel guilty knowing about all these, because she didn't know at this point with the options that were there, but it was a great option. There was her other dachshund, and this is, again, evidence-based medicine, didn't necessarily have the surgery because we know that there could be medical management associated with this, and her dog's doing fine.
Well,
so I think that's great to have those conversations where you're talking about literally the spectrum of treatments that's out there.
And the trade-offs with how much time might we have, and I think those are great, as we come back to team-based care, those are really great conversations for everyone, from our CSRs and technicians and assistants, to have as they're talking to pet families too. Help us understand some of the budgets that you have, not just financial, but what are the time budgets, what are your comfort level with things like bladder expression or giving medications even, and having those be, help us guide what are the options that are truly feasible, is a huge part of how we contextualize care to the right care plan for each family.
And to the CSRs out there tuning in, because we want to give you extra loving on this, what they did is they actually asked, how do you prefer to receive your communication?
Oh, I love that.
Right? Which is a great question.
How do you prefer to receive your communication?
I like it one-on-one, okay. But one of the clients was saying, I prefer an email.
Oh,
and
okay.
With links to videos, because she didn't understand bladder expression. Like, they were trying to show her, but they were saying, we're going to send you other ones. There was another option where they can actually videotape the client, because the primary care provider for the one wasn't in the room.
Yeah.
So the veterinarian was more than welcome to actually say, okay, so here are the instructions, what we're going to do, and show the bottle of what pregabalin looks like. We want you to start this tonight. Versus just regular discharge instructions, because she said, my husband needs visual, you know.
Okay, but like, how many of us actually, you know, the pet family gets home, they're overwhelmed, all that, they have their pet next to them as they're hearing this, like, but we probably should lean more on that, because those first few nights, especially after surgery, you know, we're talking about, or a pet coming home from hospitalization, they've forgotten everything that we've told them. And if it's not in written form or video form, then sometimes they go home and they're feeling a little clueless or anxious. So, so it's a great point.
And the CSR said, because I asked them, I said, this is wonderful that you do this. They said, well, we work in emergency and we're trying to not flood our lines with like, wait, what was that again?
The follow-up question.
The follow-up question. So they realized it was like a good, at least 50% less phone calls of follow-up, which
That's
is
incredible.
Huge. So it can really provide opportunity and access to those phone calls that need to be
and
seen.
How much better customer service is that? That we've solved the problem before it ever came up.
Right.
That's amazing.
I love that. Okay, let's talk about another case or an opportunity here where, you know, the right decision wasn't a single path, where there were multiple reasonable options. And walk us through how you guided the family to a choice they felt at peace with.
I think more than some areas, now there are absolutely components of this in wellness care, but what a poignant question for end of life or chronic care. So yesterday at WBC, I had a presentation about this where we dove into chronic care cases and some of the things that we need to consider even more than usual when those things come up. And so I think lymphoma is a really good example, because it's the most common dog cancer out there. It's still fairly common, but very different disease in cats. And so how do we help people navigate cancer care? And let's use lymphoma as an example, just because there are some really great options available to us. And as we talk about contextualizing care with evidence-based medicine being so core to what is okay to offer, knowing we don't have as much of it as we might like sometimes, what I love about thinking about cancer is that we have median survival times to lean on for so many protocols, which we don't have in the vast majority of other chronic care cases like kidney disease. And so lymphoma, when we talk about things like going to see an oncologist and doing, say, a CHOP protocol versus considering maybe some amount of cancer care with our general practitioner, we have things like Tenovia that we can lean on, again, with median survival times for T-cell versus B-cell. And then there's always the tried and true, never let a pet die without steroids, to help improve quality of life, but maybe acknowledge that we're not going to have as much quantity of life with that particular option. But it's a good cost-effective option to try and get a little bit more quality time. And so I think let's pretend for a moment we live in a magical world where finances are not a challenge. We have an insured pet, probably. Mm-hmm. Or we have, you know, a smaller percent of the population that, you know, they're game to do whatever. We're now going to have a conversation about what are you looking for? You know, we know that you know, lymphoma, we have median survival times for all those options, but they're not measured in 3+ years, none of them. We're talking about some end of life care navigation in most ways. And so asking what are your goals for your pet and your dog in this situation? Is your dog and my dog Tuxedo, who ended up passing away from hemangiosarcoma, but if he was a golden retriever that followed a different common data path, lymphoma would have been a thing for him. And he was an incredible patient. He was so easygoing. Aww. He loved going to the vet. He was in the Morris Animal Foundation Golden Retriever Lifetime Study.
I didn't know that.
He had lots of blood samples and things taken, and he lived his life for science, and he loved it. He loved going in. That is not always the patient that we're dealing with.
Yes.
And so I would have definitely considered oncology. He was insured, going to an oncologist and going in once a week would have been like a treat for him. I have a dog now that is Sprout. He is not that way. He's a little bit anxious. he's not a biter, but he's, I think, like one of those, despite all the things that we do to train him and expose him to things, I feel like at the vet with restraint, he's like one bad experience away from being a bad dog. And so I think I would have to think twice for him and keep an eye on how he progresses. You know, we see really fearful pets sometimes that coming in once a week, even with drugs, might not be the quality of life that a pet family is looking for. Driving, you know, some pets really hate being in the car. They get motion sick, and we have medications for that. And some people might say, well, you know, an oncologist is 2 hours away. I don't either have the time or I'm worried about my pet's quality of life to go back and forth 4 hours of driving a week for that type of protocol. But hey, I would come in and do tenofia with you, like it's with my general practitioner that's, you know, five or 10 minutes from me instead. And so there are those components of what are the pet factors? How does that change what we do? Can we incorporate telehealth as part of our checkups for those that are travel challenged or that are fearful and you know, kind of have some challenges for our staff as well as for the pet that we're navigating? Yeah. So I think those, especially, not that we don't care about them in emergency situations, but it's a little bit different when they have a broken leg and it's a, you know, it's a one-time situation and they're pretty much going to be happy and healthy afterwards versus, gosh, I'm really, you know, gotta find that balance between quality and quantity based on working with the pet family.
Yeah, this is a fantastic conversation where, you know, just like what Dr. Tinger was saying, we're taking away the financial component of this, but now you're dealing with behavioral components such as fear, anxiety, and stress to a patient.
Yep.
And then the time commitment that could be, you know, also fear, anxiety, and stress to clients. It could be really tough for them to manage those situations there. So it's when you talk about spectrum of care, this is really all of those components under that umbrella, referencing those things. I even think of, you know, even the sub-Q fluids that they have to come in from, you know, your chronic kidney disease from cats and dogs. And that can be somewhat challenging. And I know a lot of hospitals now are doing like house visits or house calls or tech visits and so forth to kind of meet them where they are a little bit to provide better access to care for them and decrease some of those stresses if it's easier for them to do it at home. So I really love that.
I do want to toss in that I think that when we did our pet family research and we found our three different kind of categories people tend to fall into of choice, convenience, or cost, that when people are more cost limited, not always, but sometimes they're really willing to be creative with you. And so like sub-Q fluids at home or injectables at home, their understanding of they may not be able to commit financially to the level that we maybe wish that they could. But sometimes those folks they're ready to learn some different things, or they're ready to do the 2 hour drive if they have to go somewhere for more accessible surgery or care otherwise. So don't discount the creative options,
right? I guess. No, absolutely not. And I know, speaking of cost conversations, they can carry a very heavy emotional weight for veterinary professionals, and especially our CSRs out there. So how have you seen thoughtful communication and financial planning reduce stress, guilt, or moral distress for teams while still protecting patient care?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's a real shift as we go from, if we look at human healthcare, the shift from provider-centered or doctor-centered care to patient-centered care, which is really just a little shift to say, how do we put pet families, so the pet and their vocal advocate, our clients, how do we make sure that they're truly part of the team and that we listen to all these little factors and pull them in and have some clinical empathy? We display that this is all hard. This is hard. This is hard for us. It's hard for them. And verbalize that to them and really make them feel like they're part of the team with little communication skills along the way. And everybody from our CSRs all the way to the vets communicating with one voice, that can go a really long way from thinking I'm right, and if you don't do what I would do with my pet, then you're doing it wrong. I don't think we consciously think that, but sometimes we can let judgment creep in a little bit. And that's where it can get really wearing. If we feel like if they wouldn't do what we would do, then they're doing it wrong, then it's going to be a really hard day. Because people do make their decisions, and they have different resources and priorities than we do. And if we can really find the empathy with different situations and different choices, it's pretty incredible how much that can unlock happiness. And that has been demonstrated in human healthcare to not just increase patient satisfaction, but to also increase doctor satisfaction with their jobs. Apologies, nurses are a little bit less studied, and we in VetMed haven't studied it yet, but there's incredible research that shows that sitting down and really embracing that does have some significant mental health benefits, and it allows us to enjoy our jobs and go home a little bit less drained.
Yeah, I like that. Thanks for sharing that. It really is. So if you can help every practice adopt the routine habit during wellness visits to make emergencies less traumatic later, what would it be, and how does it change what happens when a pet suddenly needs urgent care?
Well, this is a simple answer for me talking on behalf of a pet insurance company, because we really want to, you know, talk to our pet families when their pets are healthy and they're not in an emergency situation about planning for the future. And you know, one of the best ways to do that is to insure our pets. My pets are insured, your pets are insured, and that helps us be able to say yes when they need intervertebral disc disease or cancer care. And it just makes the barriers, well, is this the right fit for me and my pet, as opposed to, am I financially able to even consider what the paths are? And so that's an easy one. I think sometimes practices struggle with where to put that in. And so putting it down on a check-in form to just say, is your pet insured? And if so, let's make sure we have that on file. It also allows them to say, well, no, and why are you asking about that? Do you recommend it? And what can you tell me about positive experiences with that? And so it allows you to open up that conversation. Not that, you know, anyone needs to spend exorbitant amounts of time about pet insurance, but just the awareness factor of, hey, really, the lifetime cost of care for pets is really going up. Mm-hmm. And while we've talked a lot about emergency things today, we actually, it's not published just yet, but we have our data for the most common claims for dogs and cats for 2025 in. And for 14 years, reigning supreme for dogs, it's skin allergies. Uh-huh. And skin allergies over a lifetime of care are very expensive. Yeah. And so the everyday things really do add up over time too. And so just, you know, when they're young and healthy and everyone believes it's gonna happen to anyone else but them, that's a good time to just start plugging that. And we also know that talking about finances early, before you're pairing it with a care plan conversation, helps people to feel less anxious and less judged by having the conversation. If you just say it up front, we have financing options available if that's something that would be helpful for you.
I love that. I have this phrase, I said, it's more than a brochure, because you know where those end up. They usually just end up in the trash, like puppy or kitten packs or whatever. You get so many things in there that you're making a recommendation for a doggy daycare, a trainer, pet insurance, and it can fall by the wayside because the value system, to me at least, at our hospital, I always felt like it should be way higher than some of the other priorities that are there. Again, there's so many things to talk about.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is a social media guy in me, but if you really post it a lot and bring it front and center to show like this practice really truly cares about the financial freedom for your pet, talk about a differentiator than some other practices that might be in the community. Like, wow, you really are caring about the financial investment or the care about our pets. Social media and talking, you know, the general public, even when I purchase something, the average is 8 times you need to kind of hear.
To hear something, yeah.
Right?
Well, and look, like at Nationwide, we partner with over half of the Fortune 500. So a lot of people have insurance with us to their benefits. When you sign up for your health insurance, you sign up for your pet insurance at the same time. And so looking at, hey, is it something my employer offers? That can make it really easy as well.
Absolutely. And I love, especially Nationwide, does such a great job in educating both the veterinary profession and the pet parent side of things to know, like, this is really front and center, and supporting education is huge because obviously this is how we move the needle. So we got to get more pets insured for sure. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. Dr. Tindra, thank you for all you do and for sharing your expertise with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. And thank you all, our CSRs. We really appreciate you keeping us in track, like the cats that you are sometimes herding.
Yeah. Thank you for keeping us on task with those schedules. It's not easy, let me tell you. Where can we learn more about Nationwide?
Yeah, the best place is to go to petinsurance.com. We have a special place, petinsurance.com/veterinarians. We'll put in the show notes just for you.
Excellent. Thank you so much again. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you to Nationwide for supporting this great conversation. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone.